You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com. And streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Bar Rescue After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Bar Rescue After Show.
If you get in trouble, bring it home to me. Whether I am near you.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for doing. We're here doing Bar Rescue Season 3, Episode 13, Two Flew Over the Handlebars. I am your host, Phil Svitek, joined alongside the lovely
Dorinda Barker
with 17 years of bar experience. And
Kevin Ungar, 2 years of bartending experience.
Don't you let him. But he did have a lunch with John Taffer recently. We will talk about that. But before we even talk about that, and of course we'll talk about the episode, we have to kind of update everyone on Mr. All In.
Yes. Last week's show, All In, we received several emails from people in that area, people around the bar. That, you know, just questioning his credibility, not the credibility of the show. And I think Dorinda had made the point off air last week was that, wait, his credibility should have immediately been in question from us just by the way he went into the show. He went into the show lying and fibbing, right? And manipulating,
oh, yeah.
Trying to get.
Is that to say that Ian is actually a good lawyer? And he got us off our game.
Ian, our host last week, defending him. Yeah, well, we know that about Ian. He's always taking up. But really, let's speak to that point. Dorinda, you were the one. Talk about what you talked about off the air last year.
Okay.
Last week.
Last week.
Sorry.
No worries. I was just really upset about the whole thing because he scammed the show. He's tried to scam us.
Right.
And saying, well, it was a plan. This is the plan. This is what we're going to do. And he said, we have the emails. Well, the emails really were only between him and Brandon. The emails weren't between, let's get this straight, were not between him and Spike TV. The way he was trying to make it sound almost sounded like Spike TV was in on the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I just feel like it's shame on them, Brandon and All In. Because I don't even want to say his name.
No.
But it just makes me upset because, you know, John Taffer comes out and he does all these great things for people. And we've had so many people that we've interviewed that loved him.
Right.
And it's always the ones that it doesn't turn out well are the ones that have a problem with Taffer.
Right.
You ever notice that?
Yeah, in rare instances. You know, I remember the one guy that was fired. Remember? And but he was cool, though, you know, a few weeks ago.
I also think it's a matter of when you go into it not humble. Meaning, you know, everyone's always going to have their problems with Taffer and, you know, sometimes his methods. But if you're open to the experience, then you can do it. But he was so against it, like, oh, we're gonna pull one on Spike and we'll show them. So that's not the right attitude by any means.
No, and at the end of the day, wasn't that smart. Because if you were smart, you would have never told anybody. It's almost like a usual suspect as Kaiser Sose walks away from everything. He never said a word to anybody. That's why he walked away from everything.
Right.
And that's what made me so mad.
Right, and I had said that last week. It's like, if you were so smart, you know, you wouldn't be saying any of this. And you burned, you know, your 10% deal with Brandon now is out the window.
And it made you look bad.
Yeah.
It made you look like a punk, actually.
Well, more general terms, I think we've seen, you know, I've seen some people, you know, love the show for the fact that they have the freaky characters. And then others have said, let's just keep it to the bar science. I like the blend. I like the blend of having the crazies. Along with the bar science, because I want to be entertained at the end of the day. And again, so we're 4 minutes and 22 seconds in, and I'm going to say, I love the Pirates Bar. So, you know, as much as she was a train wreck and insane, I thought it was great television, too. So,
I mean, but the thing about her, which I liked her more than I liked All In, was that even though she hated it, she was pretty honest about it.
Absolutely.
She was honest from the get-go. Even when they burned John Taffer's face in effigy, they were honest about it.
I love it. You're right. She was honest about it rather than this guy and the guy, at least the guy from the Brixton, what he had claimed.
When I talked to him. Ooh.
Yeah, so, yeah, I agree. I would rather, you're right. It's just, give us honesty.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why, you know, when we talk about the Pirates episode, I really do have respect for her. I mean, not for that.
For that, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about this amazing lunch with John Taffer.
Oh, that's right.
It was just amazing. And you know, it was...
So it's you and Maria.
And John.
With John.
But a couple of great moments with Maria, because she's taping extra, so she has to bump in and out for interviews, so I got alone time with him.
I'm so jealous.
Yeah, no, it was... What impressed me most is what I've always felt about the show, but now I know... Now I know definitely is that he is beyond just a barman. He's really a student of people. He's really a student of business. And just his theories on business are so intricate and so applicable to, you know, anything, bar, restaurant, no question, but also any corporation, any business setting, as we know, because we use it here as a tool. The show is a tool for the staff. I know you do, Phil, and it's great. And I was telling him about that, but I'm proud of us because we were on the money. Because when you talk to him and some of the principles that he has, I was blown away just about how to hire, how to maintain. And he's in the process of coming out with, and I want to say this in the right way, so it's. It's accurate, but I think it's a 4-hour instructional DVD that he's going to be coming out with soon that will be, you know, used more in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something I'm excited to buy for us. And I think it's something just, again, people in general business, or if they want to start their own business, or if they have any kind of general business going, I can't see it not being helpful. Like I said, all very general principles. But that apply across the board. And
well, we learned in tonight's episode, we knew so many facts about him. He's done this over 800 times, etc. But he's one of six in the Nightclub Hall of Fame.
Which I did not know that they had one. And I'm so excited that he's part of it.
Yeah.
I told him, I said, you know, a lot of times I feel as though I'm being insecure when I open meetings or I'll speak to employees and say, hey, guys, I've done X, Y, and Z. I was head writer of a network. I was this. I was that. And then seeing John say it, you know, every single time, I've done over 800 bars. And I said, it makes me not feel as bad when I say that. And he said, you know, I don't have time to explain that.
Mm-hmm.
Two or three or 4 hours in, or the next day, or, you know, we need to just, you know, get over it. I know what he's saying, though, is I know what I'm doing. Okay. Now just listen to me. You know, I don't have time. I don't have time to prove my credibility. I need that time to actually fix the bar.
It's like leading with what you know.
Yeah.
Which is smart.
So.
Excellent. Well, let's get into tonight's episode. Handlebar down in Connecticut. It's by New London. I've never actually been there, but it's just, you know, the population is about 5,000 of that town.
Mm-hmm.
What was your guys' overall thoughts?
I had a little soft spot for them since I'm from a family of women, and watching the two sisters, I could see two of my sisters actually doing something like that. Hi, Abigail. Hi, Wendy. But, you know, opening up a business together and how they just act it with each other. Because when you're family, there's a difference between that and just being friends. And you can get away with so much more, like wrestling on the floor.
Right.
Or yelling at your sister because you're too drunk to even get behind the bar. So now you're a customer and now you're yelling at her. It was really interesting, but on the same side, her son was also part of the business, mm-hmm. and I felt for them because it was a whole family business, like the horse walking into the bar episode.
Most bars generally are. I mean, unless it's a single person owning it, which I understand why it's a single person, because you do marry the bar. Mm-hmm. So if you are a person who has a family, then the family's usually, my experience is, are generally involved in the bar because it really is your life. It's 7 days a week. That's the life we chose when it comes to the restaurant business.
Oh, yeah. And then when we found out what had happened to her, it made more sense why she bought the bar, because that became her husband.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What did you guys think of the ideology that, you know, we have to have fun at this bar? We have to throw a party and be part of the party. Otherwise, it's not going to succeed. I mean, obviously, terrible ideology.
Because I had some, no, I knew someone very close to me who was a bartender, and that was his big thing. Is like, no, I have a show tonight. I mean, that's literally the way he thought of it as. He would listen to music before driving there to pump himself up and go behind the bar. And it's like he'd have puppets and props and this and that, and, you know, and so. There's a lot of truth to it, yes. but she thinks she used it as an excuse to go too far.
Yeah, I think she used it for an excuse for a lot of reasons, and I think she used it for her drinking, and I think she used it to hide what was really going on with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when you do go behind the bar, it is an act. It is a total act. I did it for so long. Nobody wants to be around a boring bartender.
No.
They want to have conversation. Your bartender A is your shrink,
right?
And then is the person is your friend, and is the person is like a lot of people is their object of their affection, because they're the ones serving them. Their well, not poison, but you know, their libation.
Well, I've heard people. You know, my bartending teacher said you are serving medicine at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And so it's a narcotic and to a degree. And yes, a lot of those people, that's why they're there. They're lonely. They don't have anyone else. And they have that drink and they have you.
Yep. It's true.
So she just used it as an excuse to go too far and just party and probably sedate whatever pain she had.
Now, in terms of the recon, this was the first time that we've seen them stormtroop right in.
Okay, question about that. Did you enjoy breaking from the formula where we use the recon as a semi-stress test? Did you guys enjoy that?
I did. I enjoyed it a lot. I enjoyed it. I loved watching Russell behind the bar. I loved watching Brian do what he does best. And it was great. And then John just went in there, and they were all gangbusters and saying whatever they wanted to say. And I felt that it worked better that way, because it is a biker bar and everything that was going on.
I got the impression they held their own.
Oh, yeah.
They did okay. They didn't fail when all those bikers came in. I felt like they held their own, but then again, without a kitchen, maybe it's easier to, correct, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you don't have a kitchen, you don't have to worry about that. But I liked how they brought Brian in to then put something together. Because it did, I mean, if you wanted that bar to be the kind of bar that they wanted it to be, you had to have
Well, you're
food.
Calling it a cafe.
But yeah.
Of course.
But even with the stress test, or the initial stress test of the recon, there was no way of necessarily measuring them, right? So later in the real stress test, they had the bucket, you know, okay, you make a bad drink, it's going in the bucket. So there was no system of that to kind of measure them.
Well, I mean,
you know,
we can
in that respect.
We'll get into that in a little bit, because I want to talk about that a lot more. But I know that we have Brian on the line.
Oh, yes, we do. Don't we? Is Marissa? Do we have Chef Duffy calling in?
I believe
that would be me.
Hello, Chef.
Hey guys, what's going on?
You know, just talking about the show. You know, we get real into it here. You know,
I have a question. These guys aren't going to ask you, Chef. I'm going to come right out with it. There's one quick moment that I see Auntie give you a little hug and a little squeeze. Was Auntie hitting on you at all? Is that something that was open to you? Because I saw it really quickly. I go, I think she likes Chef Duffy.
Who, Steph?
Yes.
Yeah.
Auntie.
I have a photo, actually, too.
Let him respond.
You know, it's so funny, because that was like a topic of conversation on Twitter last night.
Okay.
Whether or not there was a little something between me and Steph. No, not at all.
Not at all.
She was pretty banged up the night before, man. I mean, it was, we all saw it. I mean, you didn't see the whole thing, because there's only, you know, 42 minutes of the show, but she was tanked, man.
Yeah, you could tell. No, you
and,
could, how sick she was, you could see.
Oh, yeah.
She was in a boatload of pain. And whether that pain was coming from a hangover or that that pain was coming mentally from just being completely embarrassed. I sat in the car with her for a little while the next day. You know, when we're in there, I mean, we get pretty close to these people.
Right.
You know, we don't just go in and yell and scream and then walk out the back door. I mean, we work with these people. We have classes with these people.
Right.
You know, we rent out rooms and we rent out other bars on days that we have training days. And we spend 8, 9, 10 hours with these guys to show them POS systems, to show them the basics of mixology.
Right.
You know, to get into the kitchens and really spend, you know, I spend time with Artie and I spend time with Steph in the kitchen on, you know, food safety and sanitation and this is how you keep the kitchen clean. And, you know, nobody's the real chef of that kitchen. I had to teach those guys how to, you know, order food, make sure they have enough in-house.
Right.
You know, Steph was, she was a sweetheart. You know, she's a mom, she's a wife, and she's a sister, and, you know, she's a bartender. And now she's a chef, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, and I think it was great that you picked it. Once again, you guys were really smart because you zoned in on what they could do. You set them up to succeed. A really simple menu that was tasty, looked great.
Yeah, looked fantastic.
You know, just hot dogs, sausage, and I think those burgers, right? Were they burgers, Chef?
Well, no, we almost burnt the place down with the burgers.
God, that's right.
The next morning. But you know what we did do? We gave them popcorn.
Oh.
We gave them two different types of popcorn. We did like a butter and herb popcorn, and we did a cheddar cheese popcorn that was popped in the kitchen.
So do you think on a bar like that, when it is slow, it's probably hard for them to hire a full-time chef or cook? So do you perceive it where Stephanie's going to tend bar and then she'd go into the kitchen and cook something if she had to on a slower day, or does it always have to be someone in the kitchen?
Yeah, no, I mean, the way that we designed it, and I mean, you know, I remember we had gone back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and the initial menu that we had given them was very, you know, it was pretty hardcore, because I start a menu usually a week out where they'll say, Bri, this is where you're going. And then, you know, I start sending stuff through, and Taffer says yay or nay, and, you know, we just start throwing ideas up against the wall to come up with some food items, and what happens then is John really picks through, and he's like, I remember the whole process of us nailing in on the hot dogs. That was such a major thing, because we wanted to have something that was easy and simple to do, that didn't have a huge overhead, which the cool part about the sausages that you guys saw, we picked those sausages up from a local sausage maker.
Oh, great.
You know, we drove around. I mean, the culinary producer that we work with, her name's Norris, and you know, she's a rock star. And we come up with these amazing ideas, and we all work very closely together on a science of what is going to work in the kitchen. You know, we can't just throw stuff against the wall and hope that it sticks. Right. We throw it against the wall, and John picks it off and goes, I like this, I like this, I like this, I like this. Let's roll with these. And then we start going in for the training. But there's a lot of thought process that goes behind it. And for this one, it was, what can we have simple and quick, easy, that they can buy inexpensively. They can update things as they go along. They can add to it. You know, Steph makes this amazing chili. Well, great. Guess what? Now you got a chili dog, baby. Let's go with it.
Wow.
Don't use my recipe. Use your recipe.
Love it.
Put some love into it. And then we wanted things that you could really just, you know, kind of wrap up and pop them in a saddlebag on the back of a bike if you guys are going out for a long ride.
Right.
Oh, that's smart.
How much was Russell's input in this episode? Because his background is in as a biker. Did he have a lot to weigh in?
Russell's no stranger to a bike, my friend. Yeah, trust me. Russell's a really, really well-rounded bartender and a really well-rounded mixologist as well. He's a very intelligent dude, and his knowledge of booze is really unmatched. I mean, I'm lucky enough to get to meet a boatload of some of the greatest bartenders and mixologists that are in the country, in the world at this point. And I got a special place in my heart for Russell because, one, him and I work exceptionally well together. We have a lot of fun together. We've got a kind of a similar attitude, you know, kind of a sarcastic, you know, mentality to us. Which we get our attention, we get people's attention through that. He knew it. He nailed it. He banged it. You know, I mean, it was a quick thing to do with him and Taffer. They talked a couple of times, came up with some great stuff, and rocked and rolled.
Chef, why don't you, if can I ask you to stay on the line with us as we break down the rest of the episode, and, you know, maybe you can almost chime in as our fourth host to kind of help
sure,
us through some of the other elements. So Phil, if... Talking about the stress test, I know, Dorinda, you were excited about, rather than ringing the bell, behind the bar when they made mistakes. They were he was making them pour the drinks out into a bucket.
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I wish it was.
And hey, guys, first, just sorry to interrupt. Sure. You know, the stress test that happened that night, like Taffer had that whole thing planned.
You mean when, like, the bikers came in?
We need to switch it up. We need to get as many people in here as possible on this first night.
Oh, so,
because normally we go in and we watch them kind of fart around with 10 or 15 people in the bar. And John was like, I remember sitting in the car and John was like, he looked at me, he's like, Duff, watch this. And the next thing I know, barreling down Main Street in Pawcatuck, Rhode Island, are 60 bikers.
So let me ask you this.
And
why?
I just started laughing.
But, Chef, why this episode and not others?
Because it was such a, because for my understanding from John, and I'm not speaking for John, I'm having the conversation that him and I kind of had.
Right.
But he wanted to do something different. One, we wanted to do something a little different for the season because of the fact that, you know, people kind of get used to what, if they know that we're going to be coming in, they know what's going to happen. He's going to come in, he's going to yell at us, the next night he's going to give us a stress test. John wanted to surprise them. They were so in their comfort zone because this was really, you know, this was really her, Betsy's living room. You know, this is her living room in her house where all of her friends came in.
Right.
So what happens as a business owner if you get, you really do get shocked by having a whole bunch of people walk into your bar? How are you going to handle that? And he really wanted to see how they were going to handle that stress of that first night. Now, did we know that we were going to blow a .21? I highly doubt that was good. We knew that. That was just an added bonus for the wonders of TV.
Amazing. And I knew
was lit up, man.
And we'll talk about the psychological ramifications as we go on. But, Dorinda, I know you're excited about the dumping of the drinks as a bartender.
Yeah, as a bartender, and also getting to know Russell. And he's pretty much a perfectionist at what he does. And even though he loves having fun, he's really into what he does. And him doing what he was doing, it was also still a showman-like thing because people were getting into it. The customers were getting into it. So whenever a drink was made wrong, the crowd would be like,
no,
like people were into it, yet they were still learning. And the thing about that, it was like, as they went in, even with the bikers, it's like they need to learn on the fly. They need to learn by trial, by error. And I felt like this is how they learned, by taking the drink away from them and throwing it out and saying, you have to do it again. And that's what I loved about it. And him holding up the bucket, John holding up the bucket and saying, this is about $200. That hurts more than just saying, oh, you made it wrong, or blowing a cowbell or air horn or whatever it is. That, to me, hurt more when saying, this is $200 and throwing it down a drain.
Gotcha. And then maybe we should move on to the fact that John kind of went to the real problem of the bar.
Oh, yeah. The real, like, the nitty-gritty of the bar.
What was psychologically wrong, you know, hurting in the family. And again, I can't stress enough why I just love how John, to me, Chef, is a student of people. Even beyond being a student of bars, student of business, he's a student of people. And that's why I always say, you know, you guys can fix the bars, but if you can't fix the people, and that's why we've seen some of these bars fail, there's just nothing you can do. And I love that, you know, he's got these great instincts to say, wait, let's peel some layers away. There's more problems here than meets the eye. And Chef, did you see the warning signals other than the 2.0? Did you also feel that, wait, there's some more psychological damage here that we have to deal with before we, you know, deal with the drinks and the menu and the decorations?
I mean, John nailed it when we were, you know, when we sit in the car for that recon for that amount of time, I mean, we're in there sometimes 2, 4, 5 hours, you know, while we're watching stuff and with TV, and, you know, you have to make some adjustments and stuff. But we're in that car forever. And I remember John looking back at Russell and I and saying to us, he's like, guys, we got a deeper problem here.
Wow.
He's like, I gotta figure this out. I gotta cut it down. And, you know, after we went in and we walked into the place and, you know, gangbusters and, you know, I mean, you saw what happened with, you know, Steph hopping over the bar and all that stuff. You know, we went back to the production vehicle and John kind of looked around. He's like, we got to do something. Because the whole dynamic of the show at that point had changed from us going in to fix the bar. And John literally turned it around where he had to fix the people and put the bar together, you know, kind of on the back end. His number one concern was really getting Steph and Betsy to sit down. And I don't know if they showed it on TV, but John sat down within that session for a good portion of it and then he left and let them alone with the counselor. So he was fully vested. I mean, he was there.
I believe it.
You know, he wanted it, and he was touching them as well and having conversations with them during the time that that counselor was there.
Now, do you,
I mean, it changed the whole dynamic of the show.
Now, this is where our curiosity lies. Do you know if these women kept going to therapy, if this was a thing, or if this was a one-time deal?
Now, you know, I know John had, I remember having a conversation, and John had said to me that he had offered to pay for therapy for them.
Wow.
He's such
Whether
a
they took that offer or not, I do not know, mm-hmm. but I remember John saying that to me. So I don't know what happened afterwards.
Gotcha.
I know they had one hell of a relaunch party or a viewing party last.
Yeah,
week.
we saw the pictures on Facebook. We were it was good, great to see. They clearly were happy with the way things went. We always love that.
Yeah.
Well, my understanding is that they're doing fairly well. I heard there's a little bit of an issue with some signage outside that was a little bit larger than the town had allowed. You know, this is New England, man. This is Rhode Island. It's a very quaint little town.
I have we have a big property back there, and I only get to use it a few times a year. And when I go, I always talk to the local owners, and they just tell me the nightmares they're put through. And it's in the Connecticut area. It's actually probably about 20 minutes from this bar. And yeah, I'm very familiar with those old Puritan laws in New England. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, as a biker, I mean, I love to ride. And one of the things that really was scary about this was on an amazing stretch of road.
Right,
you know, that main street that runs right down is an amazing stretch of road. It's beautiful scenery.
And some of the best motorcycling, I think, in the world is in that area. In fact, I don't ride out here. I have my license still. I'll never ride in L.A. because I will just die, you know. But
yeah,
back there,
seriously,
but in Connecticut, it's amazing. It's fantastic.
I mean,
riding.
It was so nice going back through. I unfortunately did not get to ride. We spent a lot of time with these people, and I spent a lot of time with Steph and Artie as well in the kitchen. But when you're riding down that road, you had no idea what the place was. There was no indication that it was a bar. There was no indication that it was a biker bar. It, like I said before, it really was like Betsy. I mean, it was Betsy's living room.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. I mean, there was there were velvet couches in there, and you know, there was a pool table, and there was a kitchen. And in the kitchen, you know, one of the things that I said last night, you guys didn't see it, but I went into the refrigerator, and I almost ripped the handles and the doors off of the refrigerator because there was black mold all around the outside of the refrigerator.
Mm.
And one of the things that happened was I just started ripping food out of the refrigerator, and I was livid, furious. Because the kitchen is my domain. That's my church. You know,
I couldn't believe you put your hand.
Exactly.
Me and my girlfriend were like, ah, when you put your hand in all the grease. She's like, oh, my God, that poor guy.
So, like, and the funny part is I don't even remember doing that stuff. Like, I get so caught up in the moment that I don't even remember doing that stuff. And everybody was asking me, I mean, on Twitter and Facebook, and even friends are calling me. They're like, dude, what are you doing when you dip your hands in that stuff? I'm like, I didn't know I did it in this episode.
Wow.
But when I had ripped through that refrigerator, little did I know that I was pulling, like, employees' lunches and dinners out.
Oh, my God.
I took a birthday cake out. It was somebody's birthday the next day, and there was a cake in there, and threw it on the floor.
Oh.
Like, this was their living
What
room.
A way to kill Christmas, Brian.
Yeah, but you
know
what?
It was really bad. I felt so bad about it.
It's, you know, you're right about the living room, but I also liked how John gave a credit for her posters. You know, he said, no, those posters are okay. So it was great that it wasn't 100% of a... Where we've seen in other places.
Where he just goes off and off and off. And he was right about the small trinkets and everything. Because if you're busy, you go to reach up for something, those trinkets are either going to come hit you in the face or they're going to fall. And then you're not going to be able to find them.
You can't see them. And, you know, just in general, I always say this to people about trinkets. And they lead to clutter. And clutter just leads to chaos, disorganization, just more stress on your brain.
Yeah.
Just, you know, simple, clean. If you even look at our studio chef, hopefully someday you'll be able to come into them. It's the same thing. You try
September.
But the more simple you keep things and the cleaner, the better. And I loved, and I hope I'm not jumping too fast, Phil, but I loved the renovation. That bar was that back bar was so clean. Just a couple of bottles we wanted to show off. And of course the beautiful motorcycle. How did you guys get a bike donated? That was great.
I totally wanted to take that bike home with me.
I know, right?
You know, what you guys didn't see, and John touched on it pretty briefly, but there were, like, filing cabinets behind there. There were drawers behind there. There was just so much buildup of crap and just, you know, the knickknacks and the tchotchkes and all the little crap that was just everywhere. You know, sinks that didn't work and floors that were just absolutely filthy from nobody taking advantage of or nobody cleaning. And all of that led to the filth of the place and the lackadaisical attitude. I mean, everywhere you looked, there was a motorcycle that was, you know, whether it's an inch high or 6 inches high. You know, there were Barbies, like, hanging from the walls with, you know, leopard skin on them. And, I mean, it was just like every, you know, the next thing I was looking for was just underwear and bras hanging from the ceiling. You know, like you're down at a bar in Key West somewhere.
Well, wasn't there a bra hanging from somewhere? I think there was.
Corinda, there was so much stuff in there that it was like ADD hell walking into that place.
But I did like what you had to say about the leopard carpet. What was it? You can't see the stains?
Yeah.
Yeah. They were everywhere. Trust me, they were in there.
Ugh.
There was also, I also felt that there were certain renovations that you guys did that we didn't even know about. Like, I saw a pretty high-end, it looked like digital jukebox that was next to the beer, that was next to the pool table that wasn't there before. Do you remember that,
Jeff?
Yeah,
I'm not quite sure if that was Touchstones or AMI. I know that we have a great relationship. Well, John really has a great relationship with those guys. I unfortunately can't remember what it was. But the jukeboxes that we put into these places and that, you know, that John works with, I mean, these things are unbelievable. They allow karaoke. You know, we saw it on Dimples from last season where they have the karaoke machines. And now they have pictures that you can automatically post to Facebook and, you know, do it to Twitter. And,
awesome.
I mean, they're really, really very high-end. And it was one of those things that they really wanted to put in because, you know, this was something that, you know, that whoever the bartender is determines the mood for the night. That bartender's in a bad mood. They're plugging their iPod in and playing sad songs for the whole night.
I mean, every time I see the show, we were talking about it last week, but every time I see the show, I want to go back to the bar. I want to get back into bar life. Right?
Yeah.
For that 45 minutes.
Yeah. No, not as an employee, but as a as a patron.
Oh, I want to go to the bars. Yes,
yeah.
For sure. Yes.
I'm like, you know what? I really want to see these bars, but just bars in general. Like, I miss being able to go to if any of these bars were close by, I'm like, what am I doing? This seems like it'd be fun a couple of nights a week just to go in for a couple of drinks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, in a place like this, this was a family. You know, all the bartenders knew each other, and they had for years. Stephanie and Betsy are sisters. Dean was her son. You know, Artie has been working there for like 14, 15, 18 years. I can't even remember.
Wow.
But all of these guys have been working there forever. So, you know, when Betsy would come in, yeah, she'd sit at the bar and throw 10 or 15 beers back. You know, doing shots, and there was no question about it. And then it unfortunately got from the point that it wasn't a business anymore. It was really just a place for everybody to go and hang out.
We haven't really talked about Dean, the son. What was he like?
He was a very quiet guy. Yeah, he was very quiet.
Did you guys have a I mean, here's the thing, right? You know, he seemed very promising to me, at least, of like, okay, here's an eager guy that wants to learn and do stuff. And then during the stress test, he was pretty incompetent of anything. So, you know,
completely. I mean, he had no understanding of the runnings of the business.
I think, yeah.
You know, the basics of customer service, the basics of service itself, the basics of bartending. You know, I don't know. I mean, I know Betsy wants to leave it to him and, you know, make it profitable for him, and whatever happens, happens. You know, my interaction with him was very minimal. Despite the fact that I was there for 7 days, I really didn't hang out with him that much. I spent most of my time with Steph and Artie in the kitchen. Betsy, I had minimal amount of time with. We really get into our groups when we get into these places. And just literally, I mean, we're hip to hip, everybody, and especially in that kitchen,
right?
And they were hungover in that kitchen.
and but, who did you get all of the kitchenware, like all the appliances and stuff from?
Say that again.
Who donated? Who gave for the new grill and the stove and everything that you guys got?
We worked with a local. We worked with a local equipment company to do that, and then we actually had a an oilless fryer brought in.
Yeah, I love that.
Which was amazing. I mean, I think it cooked frozen fries in 6 minutes. Which in a you know, when you're cooking them frozen fries in a fryer, you're talking about 2 to 3 minutes. But in this case, we didn't want to give them the opportunity to really make any more of a mess by having to add oil into the mix.
Would it be healthier without the oil? I would think so.
Oh, right. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this thing cooks with air.
Wow.
I mean, it's like a you know, it's a convection oven on steroids. And it just circulates the air all the way throughout. And you put the product in frozen. And these things came out crispy. They came out great. We seasoned them, you know, right after. That's where you got the little culinary shake from. But, I mean, we seasoned them, and they were great fries.
This might be something nice to buy. This is a great home product.
I mean, they're great. They're not cheap.
Right.
But it was one of those things that, I mean, I remember John saying, like, we can't put oil in this kitchen. We can't give them another opportunity to make a mess of something.
To fail.
We don't want anybody hurting themselves either.
The genius of John Taffer, just setting them up to succeed.
It happens every episode.
Love it. Oh, man. And I thought the decor
was
great.
We had a local company donate most of the stuff. The refrigerator was donated, or at least, you know, bought out. We might have had a trade out with them on a couple of things. But, I mean, these guys came in the first day they came in and hooked the stove top, which was a big double burner, industrial size that we had put in. They came out the next day because the grill wasn't getting enough gas. They sent a guy out immediately to refix it and put the regulator back on and get it going. I mean, they did a hell of a job.
Well, let's move into the drinks. The interesting statistic for me was learning about the taste buds and whiskey and things like the tequila. I didn't know that.
I love this show.
I thought that was really interesting.
You didn't know?
I did not know. This is something I did not know.
Marissa, one of our producers here, she looked at all of us and she's like, this explains why I like vodka.
Yeah, Maria said the same. My girlfriend said the same thing. She's like, oh my God, that explains so much. Never knew that.
But, you know, I thought that
there's
was
so much research that goes into all of this stuff.
Bar science, right?
They go so far. And the coolest part about, you know, a lot of times when we sit in production meetings, we go in the first night before we even go into the bar, and we sit in a production meeting that runs sometimes 6, 7, 8 hours. You know, we've got a crew of like 60 people that roll around, but the core crew of producers and everybody involved, you know, everybody's in there and we're talking about stuff and they're Googling and they're pulling information, and we've got runners that are kind of finding information and everything. And Tapper's sitting back and he's like, you know, he's blowing these things out of his mouth. He's like, well, did you know this? Did you know that? It's kind of fun to watch them work. It's actually really fun to watch them work.
And educational, as I said, I was blessed to get a lunch with him, and it was – I wanted to pull out a notebook, you know. A couple of things he'd said. He'd said when my girlfriend wasn't around, and finally, you know, when she came back, I'm like, I'm sorry, can I ask you to repeat that? Because I want her to learn this as well. And, yeah, it's really quite a find. You know, Spike and iWorks – you know, really lucky to find him, because we've seen other, you know, restaurant stakeout, other makeover shows with restaurants, and you know, they work. But I mean, it's for me, it's him. You know, he just makes this show. He just drives it.
Well, and there's a lot of shows out there, and I will never knock any of the other shows. They all have their good, you know, points to them and what they do. And the thing that I love about Rescue and why I'm really proud to be on Rescue is because it's really becoming a standard. It's an industry standard at this point.
Yep.
I mean, the amount of people that are gaining knowledge. You know, I can watch a show and watch somebody redo a kitchen, or I can watch somebody, you know, just watch the faults that are happening and discuss them afterwards. But the way that John really goes about it is very impressive. You know, I mean, it's becoming industry standard. Culinary schools are starting to use it. Hospitality schools are starting to use it. I mean, most of my clients, I have one guy who he DVRs the shows, and then all the managers have a manager meeting on Monday and they watch the show together. And then they break it down and discuss it, how it would affect their business and what they could do.
That's what we do here. And I think, you know, for me, I love the other shows. I was a fan of them before I found Bar Rescue. And the credit I'll give them is that, you know, maybe those had to come along to open the doors for this show to be sold. So it's great that, let's say, you know, Chef Ramsey did what he did, and, you know, maybe open the playing field for everybody else, but it's just this show's just taking it all to another level, and so you know, I can't gush it. We probably our fans are bored because we just half of our show is just talking about how much we love it. but which we should talk. I mean, I loved the renovation. I love the lighting. I liked the how they cleaned everything up. I love the mural.
I love the name. You know, right. You didn't need to change it that much. It was just the cafe didn't work.
Right.
And, you know.
Cafe was soft.
Yeah.
Grill, much more.
Well, can I tell you guys a little behind the scenes thing?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So Betsy had gone out the day of the relaunch and had the name, the Handlebar Cafe, tattooed on her right shoulder.
Aww.
And she had left because of the fact that she knew the name was going to change.
Oh, wow.
And so she wanted that part of history on her arm. And you know, Betsy's she's an attractive woman. I mean, she's mm-hmm. an attractive woman, and she's a petite little thing. You know, despite the breasts that are showing up top, she's a tiny little woman and in amazing shape. And so she's got this tattoo on her right arm, and I remember seeing her during training, and she pulled me aside. She was her and Russell were talking, and she said, "Chef, I just want to show you this." She said, "Look, I got the name of the old bar tattooed on my arm." And she said, "And the best part is I'm having the new name put on my left arm."
Oh, well, that's cool.
Yeah, so she had the one arm done one way and the other arm done another way. So, and I kind of thought to myself, well, it's going to be the Handlebar Grill, so it's going to be kind of the same. And I felt a little bad, but I said, you know what? I didn't tell her that at that point, but yeah. And she's very proud, and she's very proud of the bar.
So other than hearing that they're having some trouble with the size of the sign, what have you heard about the update of the bar now?
I've heard very little. They have been very quiet about a lot of stuff. I know they really, you know, blew up their party and stuff like that. I've heard that they're doing well. I have a couple of friends of mine who live up there who have been in there. The bartenders are a little bit more attentive. The day that they were in, they had 86-2, one of the sausages and one of the hot dogs, but they had all the other items on the menu.
Gotcha.
Now, it was a Thursday, so they could have been getting an order in that afternoon or whatever was going to happen. You know, I always kind of get benefit of the doubt on some of those things. But they said the place was clean and that they were, you know, they had a good time while they were in there. About six guys that I know had gone for a ride, stopped in there for lunch, and then were in there for about an hour and took off. So that's the best that I've heard. I haven't talked to anybody on production about it. And, you know, I think the concierge at the hotel that we stayed in sends me updates every now and then about the place. So,
well, we know it's still standing.
I like, she had the line. She said, you know, I always hoped for an angel and I didn't know it would come in the form of John Tapp.
Yeah,
which,
nice.
You know,
that made me tear up a little bit.
Yeah, me too.
That, I was just like, yep. Oh, how sweet.
I got a little misty. Chef, is there anything you want to promote before we take it out of here?
You know, I mean, I'll always promote myself. I'm on Facebook at Chef Brian Duffy. I'm on Twitter. My handle is Chef Bri Duff. You know, that's what I do. I head out, start taping next season in a couple of weeks. And, wow. You know, then I'm crazy on the road again. I'm going to Vegas and then Nashville. I'll be in Cuba for Navy Entertainment, and you know, I'm just doing what I do in my consulting business. You can reach me through my Facebook page, which is chefbrianduffy.com.
I love it. Thank you so much. And I'm just hoping against hope that we do these shows for many, many years to come, because I know with Kitchen Nightmares, that's been going a long time.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
been on for a while.
For a long time. So I'm hoping that, you know, we don't hit like a certain number and cap it. You know, with these shows, unfortunately, a lot of times they get a lot in the bank. They know they can repeat the hell out of them. But in this case, I just want to see it keep going. And from what I understand, it's now number one on Spike. It's the number one show on the network.
Yeah.
So
it is, and there's a huge following. You know, I mean, Twitter is just amazing with blowing it up, and Facebook has been absolutely amazing. I mean, this week I posted something on Twitter last week or on Facebook last week and had 20,000 views to it, and that was just on my little page.
Wow.
You know, I mean, the amount of views and shares that my one thing got. Apparently somebody created a bar rescue drinking game.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. There's one here at AfterBuzz every time we mention pirates.
Yeah, every time we have pirates, we take a shot.
Because we mention it almost every episode, don't we?
It's like the gold standard.
Yeah, we don't mean to.
If we don't mention it, it's awkward.
We've done something wrong. Chef, thank you so much, and thanks as always. And we look forward to having you in here in September. Dorinda, yeah. Where do we find you?
At on Twitter, at Lula Cherry Films.
Very nice. I'm at Undergaro, even though I never tweet, but I'm there anyway.
We'll see you on the reality show.
That's
in
true.
In due time.
In due time.
Follow us here at AfterBuzz TV, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, of course. Thank you guys for listening. We'll, of course, be back next Monday with the next episode of Bar Rescue.
And also go to iTunes and say hi to us, or
That's
YouTube,
right.
or
oh,
both.
Love that.
Leave
That's
a comment.
Right.
We like that.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later. Sans Kevin.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.